Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Blowing up by Stacks and Jacks. I'm coming out, Ricky, on the board. S&P futures up 450, NASDAQ futures up 60.75. We're bouncing up here a little bit. We down most of the day yesterday. I did not trade on this or anything like that, but I had a feeling we were going to run up for the last day of the quarter, and we sort of did. Not much, but a little bit. Now today we'll see how we're starting out for the next quarter. We have a couple of, interesting. We had a couple of deaths in the sports community yesterday. We had Dikembe Mutombo, young at 58, from brain cancer. And Pete Rose at 83. We're going to have a little bit of a summary on both of those guys tomorrow. They both were very interesting people for maybe different reasons. But Dikembe is quite the humanitarian, and I guess he spoke seven languages. And I really like the guy. Pete Rose, we'll talk about him tomorrow, too. I had some stuff in his career that nobody is ever going to do again. Do we have Mr. Carl?
You do.
I had no idea up until last week that the dude started 500 games at five different positions, Carl.
Yeah.
I knew he had played some outfield, played third and first base, and I guess he started at second base, but I never dreamed 500 games at all five positions. I mean, that's really something.
Well, I mean, you know, and then he broke the cardinal rule.
He broke all kinds of rules.
Well, yeah, but it is what it is.
How many times do you think he sold his uniform that he got his 3,000th and 4,000th hit in?
Well, yeah, there's that.
Then he'd run downstairs into the casino at Caesars and gamble it away, whatever he just sold stuff for.
Well,
that's quite a life.
Indeed,
yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. I just the last week or so, and especially the last since this storm came in, the craziness that's going on. You know, I don't know if you heard this latest bit out of our stupidity in our government. Claimed that, well, you know, it used to be that we were all worried about winds. And when there was a hurricane, and now maybe not so much. Even though they claimed this thing was a Cat 4, guys standing outside in the middle of it. I'm watching it on YouTube live stream as it comes in. No, it wasn't. But you know, now because we all drive SUVs. The amount of rain that it drops and the flooding is much worse. The surge is much worse. You know, the stupidity of some people is just astounding, and that the American public laps that crap up, and that's what it is even more astounding. You know how we solved all the wind damage problems? It's called building codes.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you listen when Dan's on, but Dan said that the difference between the people who were and where did he? He's in where? 2 years ago, they got hit on the east side or the west side of Florida.
Yeah.
And he said the places that were up to building code standards did much better, except for getting hit by stuff from other people's buildings.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's as was once said, infamously, it's not that the wind blows; it's what the wind blows.
Yeah. I got to ask him on Thursday. Did the sailboat ever get out of the guy next door's pool?
I'm sure they
was there for a while. It was after like a year, I think.
Yeah, those kinds of things are pretty ugly when they happen. And, you know, having lived on the Gulf Coast for 20 years, we had our share of that kind of stupidity. We had a guy that in our neighborhood that had a habit of being especially stupid with things like boats and docks when storms were coming. And was always concerned that I was going to end up with one in my living room. But, you know, the thing about this is that the other part of it is everybody is yelling that about the damage up in the Appalachians and in this area. It's never happened before. It's, you know, it's you blankety blanks that use your carbon based fuels.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well,
okay. Somebody seems to forget that in 1916, I think that was before you bought an SUV, Chief. Pretty sure. I mean, I'd have to check calendar, but I think
They had Model T sort of SUVs.
Yeah.
Little pick-me-ups.
In 1916, Asheville, the French Broad River in Asheville was a mile wide. It was basically what we just saw. And it did the same thing. And by the way...
When was Galveston? 1908? 1906?
I'm sorry?
When was Galveston? 1908? 1906?
Yeah, this is a Galveston hurricane, yeah. And...
Isaac Storm. Did you read the book?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was really... And it was ridiculously nasty. And, oh, by the way, the River Arts District in Asheville, which got destroyed by flooding, used to be industrial. Guess why they abandoned it?
Well, because it flooded, probably.
Well, it's in a floodplain, and it flooded, yeah.
Carl, I know this is a meteorological question, and probably should have Russell's lovely daughter here, but you kind of know. When people talk about hurricanes, I mean, some of the most brutal in terms of barometric pressure and in terms of wind speed were like, I forget the names of these darn things, but some of them are I'll say use the term, relatively small.
Yeah.
Even though they might be a Cat 4 or 5, yet the hurricane is, I'll say, you know, 150 miles across, the whole thing.
Right.
And yet some, they're not as, quote, intense in the middle, but they could be the size of this thing. I mean, if you look at the cone that went up to your house, still, if you look at the cone where the hurricane went, it doesn't even show the western part of North Carolina anywhere near the thing. And yet those people got about as much or worse rain than anybody in the middle.
Well, yeah, it was... so this was an odd storm in terms of its path, because normally what happens with these things is they come in and, you know, the weather in the United States typically moves west to east, right? And that's just because you have the jet stream. And that comes from the west and goes to the east. And of course, it, you know, it has bends and curves in it, but that's the general motion, the general direction. So that's the direction that weather tends to come from. A couple of days before this hurricane came here, there was an ordinary bog standard cold front that came through, and it dropped quite a bit of rain, as, you know, cold fronts tend to do, right? I mean, yeah. You know, it storms, right? No big deal. The timing on that was very bad from the standpoint of the hurricane for everybody around here, because it dropped a little low, a little cutoff low, which they do on a fairly regular basis down to the southern end of them. And that interacted with the hurricane and pulled it northward. So rather than going out to the east and off the east coast and out into the ocean, it came up the middle of the country like this and up into the Appalachians.
There's been a couple that did that before. Chicago got nailed with one a couple decades ago like that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's. I mean, it happens, but it's a relatively unusual scenario. It doesn't happen all that often. And you know, like I said, most of the time these things have an eastward component to their motion. This one essentially came straight north and actually ended up over near Paducah and dumped a bunch of rain over there, and that's kind of where it died. But the result of that is that as the storm came into here, it runs into the mountains. Of course, as you go up in a mountain, it gets cooler, you take saturated air, you cool it, what happens? All the rain comes out. And that's what happened. So just by being forced upward because of the elevation change, you got ridiculous amounts of rain on that side of the mountains. And that's, you know, that's what produced all the inland flooding. But all these, you know, all these areas around here, and it's the stupidity of some of this stuff is unbelievable. You can't do anything about the fact that the area is going to flood. Right? I mean, that's why they call it a floodplain. FEMA produces some fairly decent maps, and they were quite accurate as to exactly where this was going to happen. But what you can do is not put critical infrastructure there. And that's the thing that really gets me more than anything else about these kinds of events, is that there are now reports that in North Carolina, Duke Energy is the primary power provider there. Something like 200 or 300 substations were completely destroyed because they went underwater.
I actually got a email from one of our we have listeners all over the country, and we have some ladies in Ohio that listened. I don't know, they must have come to Chicago one time when we were on the air or something. And we have a bunch of ladies in Arizona. I'm sure we have guys too, but the ladies, right? Ladies in Arizona, that, because we were on the air out there, so I had an email from one of the ladies in from Ohio. Said her sister or cousin or somebody or other is in this North Carolina area. They have a house on a hill, all kinds of rain, you know, unless the whole mountain goes, which I don't think is going to happen. The house is okay, but they can't get to it. All the roads are, there's no electricity, and by the way, all the roads all the roads are washed out.
Right.
That's a problem.
Well, yeah, but again, an awful lot of this, and awful lot of this is stuff that, I mean, there's you have your local cop shops in places like Asheville. After 9/11, all of these guys went to trunked and encrypted communications. You used to be able to sit there with a scanner and listen to police. You can't anymore. And you know, all because, you know, some terrorist, you know, or the bank robber will know where the police are, right? Okay, this is great until you stick the control system and the centralized infrastructure that those things run on in a place that can get inundated with flood water and it gets destroyed. Now you have no communications. And the idea that, you know, you've got these people that everything is about the feels. We don't have to actually do engineering. You know, it's just astounding to see the differences. All through this area, all through Tennessee, well, there were some failures, all right? But all of the TVA dams held, every last one of them.
Well, because they were built at a time when you built stuff, you overbuilt stuff.
Well, I know, but I'm saying, but they all held, and by the way, a few of them were not only overtopped, they were scoured from the side, and they did not fail. Okay? So, I mean, these are, you know, and had they, oh my God, the results would have been, you know, hideous. But this was, we used to have serious people in this country that built serious stuff.
Well, you know, the specs, I'm kind of a student of a Hoover Dam. The specs on Hoover Dam, there's two spillways, right? If water gets to the top of the dam and you can't,
right,
you can't let it through the, you know, through the electrical part fast enough, the fail safe of these spillways.
Right.
Each spillway can handle a flood, the worst flood, each side can handle the worst flood that's ever been recorded there in 100 years.
Yeah. So and you got two.
They've doubled, and they have two.
And they have to. Right. I understand. I mean, we've got Douglas Dam is not very far from here, and they've got all of the floodgates open. Now, that is extremely rare. I mean, sometimes they open some, whatever. They've got them all open right now. And that,
what's Douglas it like downriver?
Well, you know what? We have some idiots who built things in the floodplain on French Broad downriver from there. And they were a little soggy.
Well, there was a huge, well, Tinley Park. There was a big flood in Tinley Park. Nancy was talking about it yesterday.
Oh, you got, you know, when I lived up in Chicago, down by the Des Plaines, it used to flood all the time.
Well, I'll give you a little history on that, since we're doing flood history this morning. I want to talk a little bit about this port strike, but there was this big flood. All these people, you know, it was all pissed off. Duh. They drag out this FEMA map, and basically the 70 or 100 year storm with this amount of inches of rain, the map was in like 5 feet of where the water went.
Yep.
They knew exactly. A buddy of mine, it was...
These guys are actually pretty accurate. Well,
it's amazing how people that actually study civil engineering stuff are pretty good at this.
It's like the whole thing with Asheville. It's like, you know, well, okay, the Biltmore Village got destroyed. Okay, that's a big shock. It's in a floodplain. All right, I mean, if you look at the firm maps, they're blue.
I don't know how people do stuff like that. I mean, if you go to Arizona, along this, there's all these dry washes, right? And one of the dry washes is this incredible, it's got to be, I don't know how many miles long, soccer fields, bike paths. There's even a couple of handball courts that are pretty cool. We played out there, it was 100 degrees. And playgrounds, you name it, the entire thing is a wash. All of a sudden, if you get rain, get your butt out of there. Because it's...
Yeah, exactly.
One of my buddies was... I never did this. He had a bunch of kids. Their father's club or, you know, something. There's a lot of campgrounds that are evidently are gorgeous in the Wisconsin River Valley. And everybody was up there camping, and all of a sudden, they have a system of warnings. And the warnings went off, and some people said, you know, what the hell are those? There was a huge amount of rain upriver, and I don't even think it rained where these guys were.
Doesn't matter.
But Ronnie and these guys, they realized, hey, wait a minute, they got their butts out of there. Some people didn't. There were people that died. All of a sudden, the water's 8 feet deep. All of a sudden, it's 40 feet deep. I mean, it was, I don't know how, but I mean, there were people that got washed in these campgrounds. You can do it, but you got to be careful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's, I mean, you know. So, yeah, so we got a port strike.
By the way, I have an assignment for you, because you're the only one that can do this kind of stuff. Again, you know, it is interesting how, as much as, you know, this country, well, in my world, I blew up in a blue-collar world, right? So you would hear the labor side almost as much as you would the other side. But now in today's world, the other guys get the press, right? So the first thing you're doing, and not that I ever was in a saloon when I was younger or now, but there was a bar in South Bend that had a really good pool table. Guys played there, and then Friday night they had a fish fry, so we'd go there during Lent, right? On the wall was a poster that said, just remember, everybody in the world except you is overpaid. You know, which I think in a lot of ways is a lot of people's thinking. So the first thing I did to this port strike, because Kevin called me this morning, and they had a big, he's down at the supply chain management conference. The guys down there have already written position papers and sent them to the White House. You got to stop, you know, whatever. Which is fine. That's what people are supposed to do. I cannot. The first thing you see is these guys turned down a 50% raise increase. So everybody in the country, your sphincter is going to get together and go, wait a minute, what are these bleeps turning no at a 50% raise? Well, of course, there's no mention. I'm going to ask you if you can find this. The last contract was 6 years, 18 to 24. This one's going to be 6 years. So the 50% is over 6 years. So I'm wondering what the raise was over the last six. If it was like 20% or something, now we're talking, you know, 70% over 12 years. That's not excessive at all, in my opinion. You're not even keeping up, are you?
Well, okay. So, you know what the basic problem with these kinds of things is, from a union perspective, from an employee perspective, right? If you're a non-union, the biggest issue is you have zero control over the macro environment over that length of time, and you can't accurately project. And so, I mean, you do not know what the inflationary environment is going to look like.
Why, Carl? After growing up, when I did, I wish these guys would hire me. I could be a consultant. I'd be an insultant or a consultant. What's the difference? Why is there no cost of living adjustment in these contracts?
Well, you know, there used to be.
I know. I used to deal with them all the time.
That was one of the big. That was one of the big things that it, you know, and they've got a lag effect in them, and that was one of the things that people cited as what ultimately ended up killing the unions, the labor unions in the United States. And I don't know that that's appropriately left on their, you know, on their doorstep. Maybe. The real problem is that the government shouldn't be creating insane inflationary environments.
Oh, I get it. I mean, you and I are on the same page there. But how is it that, you know, these guys are, if you look at the last 6 years, I'm going to say the inflation since 2018 till today is a minimum 50%.
Yeah, it's well. I mean, it depends on where you're looking, okay. But in the places where it matters, in the stuff you can't avoid. I mean, you know, as I've pointed out from 2020 to today. Well, I don't know. Obviously, I don't have 24 yet, but I've all 23. 2023, groceries doubled, and I don't care what anybody tries to tell me.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the number is. Let me.
Well, they say it's 20 some percent. They're full of something dark and smelly because, you know, I mean, my actual bill doubled. Okay, and oh, by the way, car insurance is you know, up 50%, as is homeowners. Go ahead and try to avoid paying those.
Well, the price of houses and the price of cars.
Well, but I'm saying go ahead. But I haven't changed either my house or my car, okay. But go ahead and try to avoid paying those costs, right? You can't. You know, then you have this laughable nonsense in the CPI, which of course the government loves. That you know, that health insurance was down 30%.
Well, nobody ever thought in 1977 or 8 that the solution would just be to lie to the people. According to these guys. CPI from January 2018 until August 24, meaning like today, inflation has been 27%.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, pull the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's the thing that gets me is that, you know, you've got this reactionary problem when you start talking about labor contracts that extend over periods of time. All right, and I understand the problem in long-term production facilities as well. When you're talking about major infrastructure projects, or you know, we're going to put this building up, it's going to take 5 years to build it. We're going to build these four ships. These ships take 3 years to, you know, from the time that we lay keel until we actually have something out of the dry dock that floats. I get that stuff, okay, but the longshoremen. Load and unload containers. There is no long-term thing that they're doing. They're performing a service that is essential. However, the thing that they do is the same thing they do next week as this week, and that service, you know, takes place every day. And at the end of the day, the container has come off the ship and has gone on the truck or on the rail car, and it's gone. All right. And then, you know, and then we do it tomorrow and we'll do a different one. So the problem with these longer term contracts in that environment is that you're essentially, the tension there is that you have a variable operating environment that can respond to operational expenses, except in labor where you got a 6 year deal.
Well, if you're not going to do you'd almost have to have a twice CPI to make it right. But if you're going to have otherwise, you can't. If you can't predict, like you and I say, you can't predict. You can't have a 6 year deal. You got to renegotiate the wages every year.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's my answer to this.
What if these buffoons do this all over again and they love it and they double the amount of money in the system in the next 6 years? These guys they're going to be the part that goes over the fence last. They're screwed.
Well, in chief, and they might.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, I don't care how you feel. You know, this really doesn't come to, you know, a left versus right kind of thing. All right, no. When you get down to it,
because this is big neither versus small.
Well, but you're not big versus small either, because neither of these sides
has said a word about fiscal responsibility, nor do we have a Congress that will impose any of it.
Oh, no.
All right? They just put another CR on the table. All right? It doesn't matter who's, you know, which side of the aisle is in charge from a congressional point of view. The same stupidity is going on there. Now, when that gets forced to be faced,
it never
it will.
Never will. We got a dad. Did you, if you didn't have on one side either a bottle of stiff booze or a barf bag on the other side, listen to Jerome Powell yesterday and those questions that were fed to him. How does somebody use the term inflation in long term without ever once facing up to the fact that he's the one who created it? And nobody asked a question. I mean,
Chief, I was lucky. I was saved from that. I was running a load of relief supplies over to Newport in the truck.
Oh, good for you.
So I was not listening to it, thank God, because I probably would have thrown up.
The booze would have been better.
Well, and then I get to throw up the liquor. That wouldn't have been so
good. No, not so good. Nah, it's good, not especially if it's good stuff. Anyway, we'll talk more about this on Friday, buddy. SP Futures down 75 cents, NASDAQ Futures up 24. Be right back, Mr. Joel and Kenneth.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you'll find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right
here, right now, right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures up 19. So we were up more when we came in, but now we are not. Dow Futures are down 92. Let's see what we got going on in the Dow that's going to cause it. I don't see Honeywell down 60 cents, CVX down 48 cents. Here we go. Apple's down 309. It was up yesterday, so that's 20-some points in the Dow right there. Don't forget our multipliers, like 7 or maybe even a little more than 7. I'll dig that out. I'll have the exact number tomorrow. But the multiplier, if a stock is up, say, a buck up or down, it's way more than a buck in the Dow. It's kind of strange the way that worked out. Over in Europe, DAX up 74.4%, FTSE up 34.4%, CAC around down 6.08%. Call that one flat. These guys were down yesterday, but not today. Asia, this has been all over the black. Chinese markets are still going nuts. Nikkei up 732, that's almost 2%. Now, they were down 4% yesterday. We'll talk about rocking and rolling. Hang Seng up 508. But these guys have not traded, 930. So that would be yesterday. So they don't show time today. Same thing with the Chinese markets, up 248. That's 8%. That was yesterday. I think they were closed today. But I'm not sure exactly why. But they are. Over in the U.S. yesterday, we had Dow was up 17, S&P up 24, NASDAQ up 69. Again, that happened all in the last half hour. We were down most of the day. Not that it matters. It's where you finish the counts. 10-year down 6 basis points, 3.74. One down 8 basis points, 2.05. Japan down 1 basis point, 0.84. Oil down 44 cents. Mired now back. We're now almost in the mid-60s, not even the high 60s. 67.73. Brent down 41 cents, 71.05.
Natural gas down 2 cents, 289. RBOB down a penny, 191. So RBOB's down about 17, 18 cents in the last few weeks. So should be seeing that at the pump, and I think we are. Gold up 1150, 2670. So back up a little bit today. Silver up 18 cents, 3164. These guys are at high levels here. Copper unchanged, 456. With the U.S. dollar, maybe a little stronger against the euro, at 110.9. And definitely against the pound, 133.1. It was 134. The Japan up 12 basis points to 143.74. Again, you think that the opposite direction. That's 143 to the dollar. The other one's how many dollars are in the pound. A pound is $1.33 versus $1.01. So it's the opposite calculation for some reason. Crypto up 333, 63,779. They were down yesterday. Yeah. What do you got for us, Trevi, Weather Sports? Good baseball yesterday.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 61 degrees right now with a high of 69. Partly sunny, windy, and not as warm as the past couple of days. So now it's going to be breezy with a low of 54 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 113. Mostly sunny, and the heat can approach all-time records for October, so stay cool and hydrated. Tonight will be clear and very warm with a low of 85 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 27 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 55 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 34 minutes. We're looking at 28 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, another 29 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Mets faced the Braves twice. Win game was for the Mets, 8-7. The Braves win game two, 3-0. And today we got another couple of games. The Mets play the Brewers at 4:30 p.m. and the Braves play the Padres at 7:30 p.m. And we also got a couple more. Royals play the Orioles at 3 p.m. and the Tigers play the Astros at 1:30 p.m. Lastly, NFL. Last Sunday, the Bears beat the Rams 24-18. But the Cardinals lose to the Commanders 14-42. This Thursday, October 3rd, we got the Buccaneers playing the Falcons at 7:15 p.m. And lastly, this Sunday, October 6th, Bears play the Panthers at 12 p.m. and Cardinals play the 49ers at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Are you heading down to Houston? Houston, Joel?
No plans as of yet, Chief. How you doing this morning?
All right, your boys are down there. It's a three-game series, three right in a row, right?
Yeah, on the road too. I mean, that's going to be tough. Boy, oh boy, they got to win the first one. Tarek Skubal, you guys all know him. He's leading Cy Young Award winner for sure. Leading in strikes out, ERAs, and I think wins. So, got to get. You know, they've been hottest team in baseball since last August, and just ignited this city. This Tigers. Been so long, haven't been in the playoffs since 2014, and then you know you get the Lions with the big win last night. Jared Goff, 18 for 18, unbelievable, 100% QB rating in the shootout, beating the Seahawks. So we won't talk about Michigan's second half performance against Minnesota, but they got a victory, big game on the road this week at Washington.
This Big Ten, I'm still not getting used to, like, people playing Southern Cal and going, what are they playing them for? Oops, I guess they're in the Big Ten.
Jeez.
Anyway, it's kind of... So the games yesterday were interesting. For those that... The Hurricane knocked out two games in Atlanta. So the makeup games were yesterday was a doubleheader. And if either team would have swept, the Diamondbacks would have been it. So the first game was the Atlanta's... basically winning the whole game. Then the Mets come back. Then Atlanta comes back, and the Mets come back. So it's a big shootout the first game, and the Mets win. Well, so now the Atlanta was trying to keep their best pitcher to not having to pitch him, but now they got to pitch him. Then the question is, how much are the Mets going to tank game two because they don't need to win it? And it looked to me like the Mets played just about everybody in game two. It wasn't like they tanked it. I'm sure they maybe didn't pitch their best pitcher or whatever, but... that's what the Diamondbacks have to worry about. Now, why did the Mets even care about game two? And the Mets put up a pretty good fight, but still, Atlanta won game two. So those teams both went, and I was hoping they weren't going to start drinking after the first game because then, you know, that would have made Major League Baseball look bad for the second game. But it was pretty interesting watching it. But now those guys had to play two games yesterday. Both of them had to fly someplace, either Milwaukee or San Diego and have a game tonight in three in a row. So they're at a huge disadvantage coming into this three-game series, I would think, especially if you both burned your best pitcher yesterday.
Yeah, wow. Holy mackerel. I'm looking at the standings there, and they are just, they're all three just all knotted up together at 89 and 73. So they both have, Arizona has, do they have games today too as well?
No, they're done.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Wow.
Because the Atlanta had the tiebreaker against the Mets. So they're I think, playing, so Atlanta gets to play San Diego, which is the other wild card. But then the Mets have to go play Milwaukee, which won the division. Yet Milwaukee and San Diego have the same record, so I don't know what's the difference there. The only difference, I guess, it was a shorter flight to Milwaukee. Yeah. But I don't know who you'd – I don't think if you were either the Mets or Atlanta, you could pick one of those teams as the one you wanted to play, would you?
No. I mean, they're all bunched up together. Yeah. I mean, it's like I said. I mean, with those wild card teams, I mean, going on the road, it just, you know, I guess with the travel and everything, you got to be rewarded for winning your division. But we'll see. We'll see if the Tigers can stay hot. I think they might get the Yankees if they can get by Houston. So that's going to be a tough road.
No. They got Cleveland.
Oh, they got to play Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know more than I do.
I'm looking at the what do you call
it? At the brackets?
Yeah, the brackets. Kansas City and the Orioles, the winner of that plays the Yankees.
Hmm. Stayed up too late watching Monday Night Football, I guess.
Well, I was watching Detroit because it looks to me like the Bears are a little better than last year, but their division, that might be the best division in football now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Minnesota Vikings, even with McCarthy going down, Sam Darnold just turning heads there. They let Green Bay come back a little bit, but the black and blue division there, it's going to be interesting. It really seems like they're the climbing the Commanders, too, with Jaden Daniels is the big surprise. Over in the AFC, you know, Kansas City's winning. I mean, they're not exactly impressing everybody. Ravens start slow, have a big game against the Bills. So looks like the song remains the same over in the AFC. A lot of inconsistency, though, the first 3-4 weeks of the season. So really glad to see the Lions at 3-1. They got a tough schedule coming up. They got a bye week, which is good. Frank Ragnow, their starting center, was out, but they got Dallas on the road. I think they got Minnesota on the road. So they're going to be tested. But Detroit's hopping, man. You should come here if you want some participate in some sports celebrating.
The Bear Detroit game's going to be a hot one. I got guys here to go every year. They probably already got their reservations for the hotel right next to the stadium and everything. They take the train up.
You want to go cover? I got about another minute or two here. You want to cover markets?
Yeah. What's the story on the strike? What's your opinion? Is it going to make
I'm looking for port stocks, right? And a lot of them are your foreign companies, so I don't have anything.
Go figure.
Yeah. Secondly, you know, supposedly that you know, if they saw this coming, and there's a lot of, you know, they got a lot of stuff in early. But if you think about it, I mean, if this is a prolonged strike, that's going to have some kind of impact on the economy. Right now, the market kind of shrugging it off. They found the silver lining in Powell's comments yesterday. We were higher this morning. Now, you do have one stock. I just want to alert your investors, your trade. Apple is taking a hit.
It was way up yesterday, though, for some reason.
Yeah, because this is a top component in the S&P. They buy the S&P, they buy Apple. Barclays came out with some cautious comments on new iPhones. You see this all the time. And then, perhaps getting a little bigger impact on the strike than some of these other companies. So keep an eye on that. We got jobs on Friday. I don't think that's going to alter the Fed's course. And then you got some inflation data next week. I thought the most interesting thing that Powell said was that he's not on a preset course. That's mean we're not going to cut. You know, that to me, that says, inflation, yeah, it's going the right way. But, you know, hopefully they don't have to slam on the brakes if we get a whiff of bad numbers.
I think he is on a preset course to go right back to inflating values and screwing everybody else and lying about inflation. That's been the course for 20 years, and he's right back on it.
All right. Well, I can't think of a better way to end this segment, Chief.
You know what? I hope your kiddies do something. I hope they beat Houston. I've had enough.
All right, go blue. Go blue. Lions. Go Tigers.
I've had enough of Houston. Just saying.
All right. Same here. Yep. Maybe we can steal some of their signs.
No kidding. I forgot all about that. Can we go right to Kenny?
I don't see Kenny, but Carl is still in the.
Oh, Carl. Well, if Kenny pulls in, we'll let him in. Otherwise, we'll hang with Carl. Hope Kenny's doing all right. Carl, I don't know how these people don't have inflation clauses in this stuff. I really don't. I think there might be a bad taste of it. Carl, you mentioned that some of the unions, when people talk about wage caused inflation, and I don't think that in general that's ever the cause of inflation, because people can raise prices before they give raises. Pretty much. But I will say this, in a very narrow spot, and you can agree or disagree, for maybe a 6 month to 8 month period of time, maybe even a year, that was the case. Because my view of this is so narrow, because I was so involved in it. When you had the inflation in the 70s and 80s, and Volcker came in, and he kept doing his thing with the money supply, even though the CPI now, I think, is a flat-out lie.
It is.
Look at the med stuff and look at the other stuff. Just look at the med stuff and the housing over the last 20 years, and it's a flat-out lie. Same way in autos. Take those three things, and you're pretty much insurance recently. But Volcker, even if they're truthful, for some reason, Carl, and I don't know why, because people do this allegedly every month. The person, matter of fact, one of our contributors, Mike Murphy, his mom used to do stuff for the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They gave her, and when Mike's on next time, he'll give us the specifics, but I think she had five or ten things she was supposed to go out and sample. It was, I don't know if she did rice and noodles or whatever she did. And Mike's mom, I'm sure, wouldn't lie to anybody, and I'm sure she did the job absolutely perfectly and sent the number in. And so my question is, it always seems to me, though, Carl, that there's a lag in these numbers. Even if people are legit, there's a lag. And I don't quite understand mathematically why there is, but my experience at this for 40-some years has been there is. So when the inflation under Volcker, he had it under control, even though the CPI kept coming through saying that there was increases. And it really weren't. I remember Dr. Jay and I we're living on the south side. We're driving in together. I go, Jay, do you see the inflation? He goes, no. He goes, what do they keep talking about? But after 6 to 12 months, that cooled off. Well, in that period of time, if I had still been doing the labor stuff for Pullman, I would have been still giving people raises during those 2 to 4 quarters that I'm going to say probably weren't, quote, deserved. That's the only time I actually ever saw the wages continuing to go up when the prices weren't. But it couldn't have been more than a year, Carl. So it has happened, but it was very narrow, and there was a definition to it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, the problem that you have with things like this in the general sense is that. How do you calibrate policy without information that reflects facts on the ground? How do you do that?
Right. Well, whenever you start, I hate to keep talking about my family, but I guess one time when I was a kid, I must have told some whopper, and my mother just let me stew in it for about 3 days. So I had to make up another whopper to cover the first whopper and that kind of stuff. And finally she goes, this would have been easier to tell the truth the first time. Look how much effort it's been for you.
Well, yeah. The biggest problem with lying is that you have to keep track of all the lies.
That's right. And that's essentially what she said. What are you doing? Just tell the truth. It's a hell of a lot easier. And she goes, then you don't have to worry about it. Unless it's like a real whopper, I guess. But,
Yeah. What are we? What are we? If I ever, which I'm never going to do, if I ever got stuck on TV and I get some, you know, I don't think they're dumb guys at all, but they're lopped into this thing. You know, if I were to say to Steve Leisman, I go, Steve, if you and I would have started a home building company 10 years ago and set a price for a standard home and put a profit on there, you know, that we think, you know, whether it's 10, 12%, whatever it is, or a fair profit is in home building, I don't even know, but say it's 10%, and we would have put the CPI in there 10 years later, would we be out of business underneath the bridge?
Oh, yeah.
Or would we? He'd have to say, you'd be out of business. I mean, the thing has a purpose to it. It's supposed to be there so people can use it for things like that. Now, it can't be used for that.
Right. It's a propaganda tool.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, you know, like so much of the so-called data. I mean, you know, you've got the same sort of thing within the BLS, and then you have nobody wants to actually look at data itself and have a conversation about the actual data, because if you do within the political system, then you have to sit there and say, well, you know, we've been sitting here basically playing with ourselves and watching Pornhub while this has been going on. We haven't done anything about it. And oh, by the way, even worse than not doing anything about it, we caused it. And you never want to have that conversation as a politician, right?
No.
So that's one of the big issues that we have, is that it, as a you know, as a business person, in many ways, I'm really glad I'm not dealing with this kind of garbage anymore, because you know, what started me following the BLS data tables originally when I was running MCS and actually keeping them myself is the revision games and all the nonsense. Okay, and it's why I pay zero attention to the establishment survey, because my own personal experience is it's garbage. Okay, now it's just cooked up garbage, and it's why I've dubbed them the Bureau of Lies and Scams. And I did it 25 years ago, for crying out loud. You know, and it has not changed.
Carl, where do you think, where in the, you know a lot more about this, I'm not insulting you. You know more about how this bureaucracy works than I do, because you were closer to it when you had your friends you put in Congress and some, you helped put in Congress and stuff. I can't for the life of me figure out. I don't understand this. I mean, if someday I'll be gone, and if you get to look down on Earth, which I don't know if you get to do or not, but I know, for instance, Mike Murphy's mom would sure as hell not have shaved 10 cents off the dollar price of rice and sent in a wrong number. I know she wouldn't have done that. So she sends in the numbers as she sees them, okay? And I don't think the president gets the call, you know, while he's in the can saying, wow, the CPI number looks like it's hot. Where do you want us to cut it down to? I don't think he gets that call. So somewhere in the abyss between Mike Murphy's mom and the president, where does somebody stick his finger to the wind? At what level of desk and say, man, we got to do something with these numbers? Who would take that upon themselves as a salaried grunt somewhere in the Bureau of Labor Statistics? I just, when I knew about this, you know, the stuff went out to CBOE, which was, you know, whenever people are involved, you're going to get some of this stuff happening. But nobody really wants to be that person either. I mean, my curiosity here is just something I should forget, are you curious about that at all either?
Well, yeah, I am, but I don't know that you can actually get there. I mean, that's
no, I don't think you can either. But I'm just curious. Somebody along the line, just some bureaucrat, is not going to say, "Oh man, I better change all these numbers because the president wants them that way." Do I even?
No,
tell
no. I think, Chief, it's structural. It's like so much else. You know, it's all part of the same thing when you get down to it. Okay, it's all part of the same idea. It's the corruption that has become so endemic and so embedded within everything. You had a horrible set of storms 100 years ago that, you know, that leveled large areas. And oh, by the way, a big part of why the whole reason the TVA was originally constituted was that this kind of thing, you know, this kind of storm outcome occurs in mountains all the time. All right. You need examples? Take a look at you know, places in the Caribbean where you've got mountains and they get a hurricane and what happens. The
take a look at stuff at Hoover Dam before there was a dam there and a flood went through.
Well,
there.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. I mean, this is not, you know, this is not rocket science, okay? It's we have lots of history, we know what happens. Okay. So we put the effort in, we actually analyzed this, and 100 years ago a bunch of dudes got out there and did something about it. Today what we do instead is figure out who can grift off $100 million to their best friends.
Yeah.
And you know, outcomes be damned. And it's Carl, and it is everywhere.
Carl, was the TVA, was it 90% flood control, 20% electricity? That's what Hoover Dam was like, 100% flood control, and electricity just kind of came with it.
Electricity is a convenient side effect.
Right, but it would have been done for flood control without electricity. It was needed pretty much.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the primary thing was you would like to have some towns in places that otherwise you couldn't have them because every 5 years they'd be underwater.
Yeah.
And so this is, I mean, so there's the answer, all right? Oh, by the way, we get electricity out of this as a side benefit. That's fantastic because it's not only is it a renewable resource because it rains all the time, but on top of that, it has a fairly predictable cost structure, which is fabulous. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the... But today, we just... Chief, I don't care what the issue is. We don't look at any of the things this way. All right, we have an explosion in obesity, diabetes, other chronic diseases, right? We don't have an exact cause for those things, but we do have correlations with changes in the food system, changes in the medical system. Now, are they the cause? No, correlation does not prove that. But the absence of correlation is very solid evidence that whatever you claim is going on really isn't. All right, if the correlation is not there, that's not the cause. But you have to go down the list of the things that do correlate and then say, okay, what's, you know, what can we exclude, what can we not? And you have to do the work in order to do that. We don't do that kind of thing anymore. All right, you have these people that say, well, you know, we don't have that much damage from wind and hurricanes anymore, but we still have all this surge damage. Therefore, it's because you drive an SUV. No, it's because we mitigated the damage by having building codes. And so now that's off the table. All right, now, is there still a surge problem? Yeah. Can we do anything about it? Not really. However... if you build something there because you want to live next to a place where that can happen, well, all right. I mean, you know, the way that this used to be mitigated up in Steinhatchee and in the Big Bend area in Florida was that they were all fish shacks. And they were fish shacks because everybody knew that the first time there was a hurricane, they were going to get destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and then you have some clowns that show up there and start bidding this stuff up. All of a sudden, they're $1 million, you know, Airbnb palaces. And then everyone screams when the storm comes and they get destroyed. Well, nobody cared when they were fish shacks. And it's like, you haven't changed what happens. You just tried to pretend that you could wave your arms and make these things go away. And we do the same thing with inflation. We do the same thing with economic data. We do the same thing with these cycles. And oh my God, if anybody should have to actually take a loss because they did a stupid thing. Oh no, we can't have that. All right. And I mean, you look at the stuff that's going on with the markets. It's nuts. And yet it's like the whole AI thing.
Well, the market thing is very similar, and we'll talk
about it. Well, it's human psychology.
But it's also part of the issue with the ETFs. That once,
yeah.
Once companies get big enough, you almost, if you can do any kind of a diversity, you almost have to, they're 40% of it.
Until, well, yeah, if I buy the S&P 500, that's where the money's going, whether I like it or
not. Whether you like it or not. And same thing happened in 2000 when Cisco and those companies were the... you know, afterward, when Cisco was $65, everybody thought, well, it's going up every day, it's going up every day. Well, when they all dropped down to, you know, way less, and somebody looked at Cisco at $6, my first thought was, how did this thing ever, was it ever 60? Right. Like if Microsoft someday, and I'm not saying sell it because it looks like it keeps going up, Microsoft someday might not be 15 times or 14 times revenue. There's no way if people just looked at Microsoft itself, and it wasn't an automatic buy ever since somebody like me buys the Qs or the Spiders, I don't think it would be trading 14.7. 14.
Right.
I mean, it's just the way it is. Boy, some of these numbers on this these ports, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Joel was talking a little bit about how people got ahead of this a little bit. They're doing how many thousand containers a day, and how much can you get ahead of it, for God's sake? I mean, the amount you do per day is so dramatic. Can you be a week ahead of it? Maybe, but you're not going to be a month ahead of it.
Right, right. It's just, I mean, but this is just the thing that we look at, is that we look at all this stuff that's going on, and now you've got this, people respond to incentives, okay? They always have, they always will. And you know, I mean, I see that Hal's popped in. Well, he just posted up a thing here. We've now got margin debt. This is not what you want to see in a market that's up trading up near its all-time highs. It is up above where it was during the pandemic.
Yeah, pandemic. It's back at like a record.
It's at records, yeah.
How do you, Kevin, you know what? Why don't we have, Hal, feel free to pile in. Kevin, I talked to Kevin this morning. Kevin was zoned out this morning. You might ask yourself, was he smoking dope? No, he wasn't. I get this text at 5:20. Is the producer late? And I go, no.
5:20?
Evidently, Kevin didn't realize he had trucked down over to the central time zone when he's in.
Oh.
So he thought it was 6:20 and there was something wrong.
You know, that happened to me at a job interview at the American Economic Association.
Really?
We go to Denver and my laptop doesn't change time zones and I'm in the wrong time zone. And the AEA at that time in Denver, it had multiple hotels. So I'm at the coffee shop at the main hotel going, yeah, I got plenty of time for my interview. And then I realize I'm in the wrong time zone. I had to run like, I don't know, 4 blocks downtown Denver to get, and I was like 5 minutes late.
God.
Oh, man. It didn't impress the committee.
Oh, you know, Chief, I've had this happen when Sarah and I were out in the Tetons. That's going the wrong way. And I, you know, you want to talk about getting up early in the morning and making sure the coffee machine works. Holy garbage.
Well, the Tetons are, it's a beautiful spot. It's just south of Yellowstone. You got to go through Tetons to get the Yellowstone, right, from the south?
Yeah, we were out there for a half marathon, I did the show out there, and it was like, oh, it's still, you know, pitch black out.
Oh, yeah.
And
Hey, if you really want to find out what, why they named it that, go to Quebec. Like my Uncle Dick went to Quebec. He was driving a bus. He met his future wife while he was driving this bus. And he was he got out of the bus, and people are getting off this bus, you know, all the passengers, and he's just standing out front of it. And this French-speaking Canadian comes up, and she just starts laughing. And he's, like, trying to figure out why she's laughing. And his name is Dick, by the way. And she goes, why is your bus called Big, you know, Tetons?
Oh, there you go. So she was immediately interested. She was interested. That's interesting.
I can't say the word on.
I get it.
But yeah. God. But that's how they met, and they got married, you know, a few months later.
One can only read into that some things, but just I do have a question for the both of you guys are here. Kevin was talking about how it's a lot of it is automation. What kind of automation do you really have when you're plucking something with a crane off a ship and a guy's running the crane, you're dropping it on a, you know, a rail car or a truck? I mean, are we trying to do this robotically without people doing the crane? I mean, what is the automation that people are fighting against, I guess, in the port area?
Well, if you look at those Toyota commercials where they show the building of their trucks in, I don't know, Texas, you know, there's not a human being on the production line from what I could see, and I can imagine the kind of technology they want to implement in these ports. I mean, I think it's easily imaginable. I've never worked on a port. When I was in the Navy, when we pulled up to the pier, it was all kind of like manual labor. We had a guy operating a crane that I think brought I was in the Navy. I don't know what the bow and the stern is. You know, I knew what the nuclear power plant was, and I can operate it blindfolded. But man, when it comes to like the moorage, I guess it's called, that stuff was brought on with a crane, and you know, we kind of like did it manually. But I can imagine them just wanting to automate that stuff because, you know, humans are expensive. You know, I think I read in a textbook years ago, labor is about 70% of a firm's cost on average, right? So with all this technology that's coming out, I can imagine them wanting to do that. I think the auto workers unions are, you know, pushing back on the automation. You know, General Motors and Ford and Toyota and Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler. And that probably explains why, you know, if you subtract out that labor component that, you know, Toyota is able to do with its automation, probably explains the difference in the difference in quality.
Aren't you down to like 30 man hours per car or something? It's not even that, is it?
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, and I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just relating a story. I worked on the truck docks. Sometimes we get a lot of stuff from the East Coast, right? Or actually from, it must come from the West Coast because we were Illinois California Express, and there'd be a load of like, clock radios or some electronics. There weren't any cell phones or anything in those days, but it'd be, you know, some nice electronics, radios, and so forth. And you'd pick up like 5 boxes and they'd be like 40 pounds. All of a sudden you'd pick one up and it's like 10 pounds. you had the feeling that a few of the ones inside, even though it was absolutely immaculately put back together, the box, and somehow or another, a few of the ones on the inside were sort of missing, that somebody had wet their beak along the way. And then they had these things, they had these cages, these big wire cages with a lock on them. They would put the electronics in these cages and lock them, so guys couldn't do that. And then I think there were guys that could pick the locks and put them back on, like you didn't even know there was... It was all the port stuff has always been kind of interesting.
They found it on the side of the road, right? That's not what they say in Goodfellas.
Yeah, a little shrinkage, a little shrinkage.
Yeah, there's a little shrinkage.
Oh God! So what do you both? Well, you're still here, Carl. What do you think happens here? Is this thing gonna last a week or 2 weeks or what's the story?
I don't know.
If Kamala starts sinking because she's the vice president, and you know Biden, I've heard Biden was told to stay the blank out of it by the leadership of the union. But I think if her poll numbers start to sink, if her approval ratings go down, and I think she'll get the blame for it. I don't think they can blame Trump for it.
Well, what do you?
It's all. I mean, it'll be political. I mean, if she starts to suffer.
Yeah, but I used to notice crap. Isn't the first thing you do under the Taft-Hartley is a 90-day cooling off period?
You could do that, but invoking that is going to enrage the port workers' unions, the longshore.
Yeah, but doesn't it?
A lot of them are probably, you know, the leadership might be in favor of, you know, Biden and Kamala, but I think a lot of the guys in the union, I think it might be split 50-50. So I think Carl's right. It would really probably enrage.
Well, I mean, but if you do something along the effect of...
It'd probably shift a lot of the votes to Trump, I think. Well, Biden's going to suck, right? Biden's going to suck.
But it's somewhat of a... Just from what I remember, and again, I'm not. This is ancient history to me, so if I'm wrong, I thought it was a 90-day cooling off period, and they would suggest mediation during that. It didn't mean you couldn't strike. Right. It just means that you...
Well, yeah, but this is political. Trump will make it a big-time issue, right? He wants those votes. So he's going to stir it up.
Yeah, exactly. And then on top of that, they, you know, he could try to order them back as critical, you know, as critical infrastructure workers. The political winds on that do not blow in the Democrats' favor.
No, I don't see how...
He can play it both ways, too. He can play it both ways.
I don't see how... some sort of a cooling off period with suggesting mediation for a while so it doesn't happen. I don't see how that lands bad with anybody, but I guess it would. You're probably right.
I mean, well, I think the rank and file membership, Trump can play it up. If it goes on forever, he can just point out that the current administration, there's no leadership, so he can play it both ways.
Well, he's going to play it both.
He's going to play it both ways, and he can do it successfully.
We're going to have another debate where two people that are absolutely caused in their administrations, all the inflation, are going to sit there and accuse the other one of doing them doing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about. I listened to the Federal Reserve.
It's not economics; it's politics.
Well, they're for the next 40 days, they're liable to say anything to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And people are dumb enough to believe them.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was a big thing today with professors, and Trump was there, he'd tell you professors that you're not going to pay income taxes or something like he did with the wait staff and with overtime. But it's never going to happen. If you believe the guy, I guess it's all on you. I mean, but whatever. She's the same way. I mean.
It's populism to the nth factor. It's crazy.
Well, Carl, thank you very much for hanging, bud. And we'll talk on Friday. It's not like we're not getting any more topics. Do we ever run out of topics?
Nah, we won't run out. We'll have a jobs report.
That's right. Oh, yeah. That's our big day anyway. So, what's your early read on that?
I think there's an awful lot of internal softness but you know, now this is the storm is outside the sample week, so it's not going to show up in this one. Okay, so's the strike. So this is going to be interesting because if you see weakness in here, you could take any kind of weakness you see in here, and then you can add those factors of the dislocation and the disruption from both the storm and the longshoreman strike. I think there's trouble inbound, and of course, you know, that will stoke people on the market side. Well, that just means Powell's going to cut rates by another 500 basis points.
Well, yeah, without a doubt.
Right.
Good news or bad news is good news, right?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like
right up until you lose your job, Hal, then it's not.
Well, I mean, I'm talking in terms of the markets, right?
But
in terms
of the markets. But there's been
not my friends and family, but in terms of the markets, right?
Well, but when I have both of you. When I was young once, it was all jobs, and if somebody got laid off, they didn't have a $1.5 million 401k plan to lean back on. Now, I almost think people that are working and that have had historical jobs, but almost at age 62, they'd almost rather lose their job than have the market go down.
I think you're right. And there's so many people. And part of the problem is, of course, that, you know, until you get to the age where you can take that money out without being penalized, then, you know, you're sitting there looking at it going, you know, oh, that can't happen. We can't have that, right?
Well, I mean, you can always, if you get candy, just move it to an IRA, but it's still money.
Well, right. I mean, my daughter did that because, you know, she's had a couple of jobs that had little things, and, yeah, you roll them into an IRA.
But the people, not everybody, but the people that, you know, Audrey and Nancy talk about, I mean, regular people buying houses and stuff, and when you see somebody who, you know, you see somebody who worked for the police or the fire or something, those are good jobs. If they can plunk down 800 grand cash for a new house, it's not because they saved it up as a policeman or a fireman or a teacher.
Right.
It's because you bought a second house or your parents had stock they bought how many years ago and left it to you. It has nothing to do with your income. The wealth part of people's wealth from stuff other than income, it's not making $100 a week at age 25 and putting 20 in the bank for the next 40 years. That's not the program ever now, I don't think, which it was when we were younger.
Yeah, it's just it's the shift. The shift has been, you know, slow over time, but inexorable, and it's all in one direction. It's you know, the asset markets are the only thing that matters.
So the chances of Powell being thrown out because he's going back to the old plan, people are cheering his ass.
Oh, I know, but you know that only works up until the point that it causes an exponential reaction in the other direction, and it will. It's I don't know when,
but it will, because anytime that you try, you know, trees do not grow all the way to the sky. Okay, it does not happen. And when you try to force that sort of expansion, what you see is it's all multiple expansion. Yeah,
okay, but if the three of us, I think, are in total agreement on that, yet I'm going to say, if it happened tomorrow, I was 7 years early. What were you, Carl? 8?
Well, I am stunned at how far it's gone.
Me too.
Okay, and you know, and I'm the first to admit it. I never believed that it would get anywhere close to this level of insanity.
But it's beautiful, isn't it? If you got the stuff.
Well, it's beautiful until it's not.
You know, you get guys like Hal, who's got, you know, he's got the 50,000 shares of Apple that his dad bought at 5, and he's just sitting on it.
Yeah, well, okay. At some point, he's going to sell it, though.
Hal's going, is it me, Hal, or is it some other Hal?
That's the Hal 9000 computer from...
there you go.
Well, Carl, thank you. Have a nice day.
You bet.
So, Hal, this could be interesting, and I'm a suspect that you might love to be a guest. I don't know if it's going to start tomorrow, but I think we're going to have a half hour, I don't know if every Wednesday or a couple of months, where we are piped into the... What I understand from Russell, a couple of faculty members and a few of their grad students like to get there early for their 8 o'clock class and basically BS about markets and what's going on in the news for 15 minutes. And he asked them if they would like to expand that to a half hour and be on with him and me and maybe another guest and talk about it on the air at the same time. And evidently they're all for it. That'll be huge fun, won't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm in if you want me in.
Yeah, because I mean, your point of view is knowledgeable and different. We all come from like a different spots, and I'll bet, you know, they never heard, they'll have some point of views that we've never heard, and they'll hear something from us maybe. I think, you know, whenever you're going to get people with different ideas, you always learn.
Opinion. It stirs the pot, definitely. I was invited to a minimum wage discussion in Park City, Utah. And Park City, Utah is not the most conservative places. And it was in a Presbyterian church, and the Republican candidate that was running for office was sitting next to me because he felt like he was my ally. And as soon as I opened my mouth, boy, howdy, did I stir the pot there.
Did he move away from you, like if you farted?
Yeah, he physically moved his chair toward the Democrats and progressives that were, because there was like an 8-person panel. And I was basically on the left of the stage, and he was right next to me. And he just physically, kind of like during the debate or the discussion, moved his chair more toward the center.
At one point,
the lightning struck. The lightning struck, and it kind of caused a power bump, and I was right in the middle of saying something. And I looked at the audience, and I go, man, even God doesn't like what I have to say.
Like the Three Stooges episode where they kicked Curly off the end of the bench, and he landed on the ground.
Yeah, it was like that, man. And boy, did I get the questions. And the Democrat that was running for office, he's a lawyer. His name was Brian. Him and I were on the radio promoting the event. Him and I got in a pretty good discussion, and I go, of course Keynesianism works. You're an elected politician. It's got to work, right? You expand government, you increase taxes, and sure, it works. That it works politically, right?
Well,
but it doesn't work. It doesn't work to hold down inflation.
The item that you and I are always jousting about is, and which is easy to do because I agree with you theoretically, and yet I love to give you crap, because once let's say perfect competition works terrifically until there is one item that isn't perfect that causes a little clog in the system, and once that happens, all kinds of other bad stuff happens that almost has to be, in my opinion, righted. And I use the example, the example I always use is railroads. Okay, you're not going to have, the first railroad out of Chicago was the Chicago to Galena, I forget the name of the thing. This is back in, you know, whatever it was, because it was a silver mine up there. So the guy builds a railroad, he gets stuff from the government to build it. He used to get property on either side of the line, right, to sell, to pay for the line. Matter of fact, the five western railroads in this country got 22% of all the property in the country, something like that, Hal? Huge number. Okay, so This guy builds a railroad. Now, you can say, you know, it's perfect competition, but there is no competition. There's just the railroad. Now, if you and I have a farm up there, like you guys had in Idaho, and all of a sudden you go, hey, there's a railroad here. How much, you know, do you guys want to take my corn to Chicago where I can sell it? I don't know. How much you got? You know, but what, once you do that, once you give somebody the right to have the railroad and you don't say, here's 15 different guys and we're going to make the right-of-way a mile wide and we can have 15 different rails in there and everybody got their own competing place. I mean, you're not going to do that. So once you decide one person's got the line, until you give something to somebody else 20 years later, maybe 15 miles further south, where there's another railroad, or zounds, somebody makes a road, which nobody had, for that period of time, that person has, there's no competition there. He can basically screw these farmers as much as he wants. So that enter your ICC saying, wait a minute. You can't charge a guy more to take the corn 3 miles than they're doing on a competitive area when it's 50 miles. So we're going to come in here and we're going to set all the prices. But you and I know is not something you want to have happen. But it wasn't the first thing that happened. The first thing was, we decided to give these guys property for a railroad. Now there's only one, and there is no competition. So,
but that's the reason why it's not perfect competition, because the government comes in and basically says, I'm going to give you a monopoly by giving this really cut-rate discount on this land, and nobody else is going to be able to afford to put up a railroad that competes with you. So the government doesn't set up a perfectly competitive market. It sets up a monopoly for this one railroad.
But there are natural monopolies.
Yeah, but the government created that line.
How could they have done it differently?
Well, one way they could have done it is they could have just maybe sold off the land, or maybe they could have, instead of homesteading like they did the East, maybe they could have homesteaded that made sense for the Midwest and the West. In the Midwest and the West, you need approximately a farm of 800 acres to make it profitable, but they kept the homesteading acreage at like what was 180 that they used for the East. They applied that to the West, and you can't make a farm in the Midwest and the West profitable generally with 100.
Oh, but you can. I don't know how much you've. Well, I know you're all over the place in your van, but look at the Midwest. The farms in Ohio, they were farms for people to live at.
Yeah.
It was way different than an Iowa place where the farms square, you know, 2 square miles and you're making corn for market in Ohio.
Well, I'm talking about the initial homesteading. When they open up the West, the Midwest and the West, those farms generally need to be larger because they get less rainfall. And if you just fly over the country and you look at, you know, east of Mississippi and west of Mississippi, you see a big difference. There's just trees everywhere. Essentially, from the Mississippi east and to New York, right? There's just trees everywhere. But over there on the west side of the nation, there's a lot of just prairie grass. There's very few trees unless you get to the mountains.
You see the big circles where they sprinkle.
Well, yeah, but that's irrigation. That didn't exist in the 1800s.
That's what I'm saying. But I think it's in well, you've lived up there. In Wyoming, don't you need like 2 acres per cow before so they can just eat?
Yeah, I mean, you just generally need larger farms west of the Mississippi. I'm not saying everywhere west of the Mississippi, just generally on average. You need a larger farm, and the government kept the acreage of homesteading. I mean, if you made it, basically they're applying John Lockean rules, right? If you made this ground productive, then you owned it, right? That's the Lockean idea of property rights. If you make it productive, then it's yours, right? It's really hard to make a farm productive when you're limited to 180 acres. Well, out west, you need a much larger farm.
What I'm saying is every time...
The problem of the West and railroads was the fact that they created these monopolies with these land grants that were very beneficial to very few people that are able to purchase them, right?
Well, what I'm saying is their motivation to have the Transcontinental Railroad...
Yeah, I'm not questioning their motives. I'm just questioning there.
Well, I'm saying that you end up with these pockets.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to have.
Hey, their motives might have been, you know, wonderful, well, right? But what it created was a monopoly line.
Look in my industry. They had thousands of people literally making markets on stocks and options and futures. And they said, oh no, we're going to allow people to have faster feeds, so those people are at a huge disadvantage, and now you got 10 people.
Yeah, well,
that's insanity. Yeah, that's insanity, in my opinion.
The large corporations, the established firms, the ones that have been around forever, they don't want competition, so they lobby for things that eliminate competition.
You look at competition is the greatest thing in the world for every industry but mine, because these guys are cutthroat. These guys are cutthroat competitors.
Exactly. I just created this lesson for my health economics class, and it's based on my brother Rod's experience in Los Algodones, Mexico. And when you read about Los Algodones, it's really quite interesting, because relative to the United States, it's a pretty much a free market in medicine, pharmacy, and dental. And sure, there's these marginal firms, but they're found out because the internet provides people with information. So there's a lot of hucksters down there. But the majority of the dental clinics and the hospital clinics, they want repeat business. So they provide their customers with excellent medical care, excellent dental care, excellent eye care, excellent pharmacy care.
I'm gonna bet, Hal, without even knowing the area, I'm going to bet that whatever monies they get back from the state, and whatever state this is, they get on a timely basis. Because there's no way you could have competition in Illinois, because they didn't pay anybody for a year or two. And the smaller pharmacies and the smaller people that provided service never got paid, and only the people with big money could afford to do it. It had nothing to do with medical care.
The people that are getting those services down there are pretty much paying in cash for the most part.
Well, that's another way around it. But I'm saying there's no way that that you and I own a pharmacy here and sell somebody a prescription for $200 that we paid $185 for and don't get paid the $185 for 2 years. Unless we're Daddy Warbucks, we're not doing that.
Well, we're talking about across the border from Yuma, Arizona, right?
Yeah.
In Yuma, Arizona, you got restaurants and movie theaters, but you have very few doctor's offices, dentist offices, and pharmacies relative to the size of the population compared to Los Algodones, Baja, California, Mexico,
well,
right?
But the point I'm trying to make is every time you see a flaw in the competitive model, you usually find a bottleneck. And if you don't fix the bottleneck, there's a reason why it's non-competitive. You know, a guy like you, now why didn't you... I don't even know if this was where you would have had to go to get these things. But speaking of railroads, did you know that the Permian Basin, that whole area, was originally owned by a railroad that was never built? There wasn't, and not about the whole thing, but I read this story once, and I actually read it a couple times. Somebody decided they were going to have the railroad that goes across there is the Southern Pacific, which goes along the south of Texas and the south of Arizona. And it goes all the way to California from there, right? Remember the movie, what the hell was it, though? Spencer Tracy, Bad Day at Black Rock?
Well, I remember the 310 to Yuma.
Well, yeah, so I mean, those are that's the Southern Pacific.
And the remake with Russell Crowe is really good.
Well, then above that, the next train that goes all the way across is the Santa Fe. And that's in northern Arizona, northern New Mexico, right along I-40, basically. Old Route 66, duh. Well, somebody decided they were going to have another railroad in the middle there that was going to go from Fort Worth, I don't know what the path was going to be, but across central Texas to the West Coast. And I think San Antonio and Western or something like that. Fort Worth and Western or something. So these guys get this property from the government. They go out and they raise some capital, and they start building the railroad. I don't think they made it, I might be exaggerating here for the purpose of the story, 10, 20, 30 miles and said, screw it. But they still retained rights to all the property. Mm-hmm. But there's nobody there. I mean, it's arid West Texas, and that's where...
Did they discover oil?
That's where they discovered the oil. So, but
yeah, they probably decided, hey, the oil's a better business.
No. This is years and years after.
Oh, years later. Okay.
Years later, but still, somebody somewhere had this stock in a deed in deeds of this property. And now I think they get a royalty from everything that comes out of the Permian.
Yeah.
Now, why
but those are land grants. Those are basically monopoly positions.
Yeah.
Provided by the federal government, right?
Well, that's so it's not competitive. Burlington Resources was the land and all the mineral rights that they found on it after years and years that nobody knew when Lincoln gave it to them. But that was the mineral rights and the land rights from all the land that was owned by the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy that became the Burlington Northern.
Yeah.
They said, wait a minute, we better make two companies out of this. All the property that we're selling off, all the, you know, if there's any gold and silver or lumber, whatever the hell's on the other stuff. But they got essentially 20 miles, I think in some areas, that was as much as 20 miles on each side of the track.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah, that's just federal government creating
this. But also it was property that nobody wanted. It was out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
What's 20 miles?
There's probably settlers from England or Ireland that would have loved, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't like they couldn't. The idea was that they were supposed to sell it for money for the railroad.
Yeah.
I mean, when you've been in Illinois.
If you're going to put up a railroad from, you know, some town in the Midwest to the California coast, are you going to sell up that land? No, you're going to do like they did in Blazing Saddles. You're going to create these towns. You're going to be the boss of the town.
Goes with it. But, you know, this started when you come to Chicago. You see, most of it is a grid network, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a few angle streets. Well, the grid, there was like nobody here. After Father Marquette, they decided to build this thing called the I&M Canal that was going to connect the Great Lakes to the Mississippi River. I mean, that's what put Chicago on the map. Up until that time, St. Louis is way bigger than Chicago. So they dig this canal. Well, they cut up the whole area of what is now Chicago and said, okay, every other square mile goes to the canal company to be able to sell, to make the canal. That's how important this canal was. Well, there was nobody to sell it to. So, but they must have got enough. They scratched together enough money by selling it to make this canal, and all of a sudden, Chicago was essentially born.
Yeah,
but they
sold to farmers those mile squares.
I the only people here when they started, I think, were the Indians. I don't know who the hell they sold them to, but or maybe they just kept them or borrowed against them or who the hell knows. I mean, but they ended up, you know, scratching the canal out, and all these drunken Irish guys dug the canal essentially by hand before you had any kind of steam shovels or anything like that. I mean, can you imagine digging a canal through
today,
a swamp?
Today, Trump or Kamala would tout a canal project by saying, hey, we have all these people digging this canal with shovels.
Shovels in one hand. They still find, when people dig along the side of it, you still find like pints of old booze.
Yeah.
Empty, because these guys were drunk all day. I mean,
they had to be, I guess.
Can you imagine digging a canal through a swamp when you're up to your eyeballs in water and you're digging? How the hell do you do that?
If you watch the old episodes of Little House on the Prairie, Pa Ingalls, he'd go on these, when the farm dried up and he didn't have a harvest, he'd walk like 200 miles and he'd go blast holes in mountains, you know, he'd go on these public work projects building canals or railroads. And it's just kind of what, you know, people did back then.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
SP Futures down 6. NASDAQ Futures down 2. We were up. No, we're not. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 7. NASDAQ Futures down 70. I'm reading some of these statistics, Hal, on this. How many containers per day these ports are? It's like 50,000. It's an incredible amount of stuff that's in the international trade. I mean, it's really amazing when you just take a look at it. These container ships are so big. I mean, it really is. The things we can do as humans is really something. Dow Futures down 108. We're in Europe. These guys are higher. They were down yesterday, but they're higher today. DAX up 105.6. Then FTSE up 46.6. Kick around, all Weber's only up 8. We'll call that one flat. So they're a laggard today. They were leading the other day, but not so much today. Over in Asia, and this continues to be crazy. Nikkei was down 4% yesterday. Today it's up 2%, 732. And Hang Seng and mainland China are closed, so they're not trading after being way up yesterday. China's done amazingly well by putting all this money back in the system. If you were long Chinese markets, you're doing very, very well. And that's what people think here. If we ever have a problem, the Fed will do the same thing and pump up the markets. And so far, they've been right. Yesterday, the Dow up 17, S&P up 24, NASDAQ up 69. Happened really in the last half hour, maybe an hour of the day. We were down most of the day, and then we ran up on the close to finish the quarter. No surprise there, I guess. 10-year down 6 basis points, 3.74. The Bund down 9 basis points, 2.04. Japan down 1 basis point, 0.85. Oil continues to languish here. Down 75 cents, 67.42. Made a run up to 72. All of a sudden, the oil bulls were coming out of the woodwork, and then we come right back down. Brent down 72 cents, 70.74. Natural gas down 7 cents, 284. RBOB down 2 cents, 190. Gold, which was down yesterday, bouncing back today, really almost up as much as it was down yesterday, up 18 bucks, 26.77. Silver up 25 cents, 31.70, trying to get back to 32 again. Copper up 3 cents, 4.57. Foreign exchange, dollars up a little bit. The euro's down to 111, actually one below 111. And the pound is down below 134. So dollar has been gotten stronger. And we have crypto up 308. This was down pretty much yesterday, but up today, 63,754. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 736 here in Chicago. We got 65 degrees right now with a high of 69. Partly sunny, windy, and not as warm as the last couple of days. Tonight's going to be breezy with a low of 54 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 113. Mostly sunny. Heat can approach all-time records for October, so stay cool and hydrated. Tonight will be clear and very warm with a low of 85 degrees. Inbound Kennedy for traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 46 minutes. We're looking at 80 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 55 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 30 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 47 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday in the MLB, the Mets faced the Braves twice. The Mets won the first game, game number 1-8-7, and the Braves took the second game, 3-0. Today we got the Mets playing the Brewers at 4:30 p.m. and the Braves playing the Padres at 7:30 p.m. We also got the Royals playing the Orioles at 3 p.m. and the Tigers playing the Astros at 1:30 p.m. Lastly, NFL. Last Sunday, the Bears beat the Rams 24-18, and the Cardinals lose to the Commanders 14-42. This Thursday, October 3rd, we got the Buccaneers playing the Falcons at 7:15 p.m. And lastly, this Sunday, October 6th, Bears play the Panthers at 12 p.m. and the Cardinals play the 49ers at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
If you like baseball, today's the day. Boy, there's a lot of games, and it'd be interesting to see how fatigued Atlanta and the Mets are as they go through a three-game series after having to play two games yesterday, and they played Sunday and they played Saturday. So a lot of baseball for those guys, and you kind of run through your pitchers. Yeah, who was the comedian that did the little baseball skit that was baseball?
Oh, yeah, that was Abbott Costello, right?
No, it was a guy, Hispanic guy.
Who's on first?
No,
what's
it was
on second?
No, that, baseball has been very, very good to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then they said, so what would you advise?
He was on Saturday Night Live in the 80s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what was it, Garrett? It wasn't Garrett Morris, was it? Oh. And said,
it might have been Garrett Morris.
Yeah, said, what was your advice? Keep your eye on the ball. Remember that, Ricky. Keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah, Garrett was funny.
Oh, yeah. Baseball has been very, very good to me. Yeah, it was, but I like. So what would you recommend to young players? Keep your eye on the ball. you can't argue with that.
No, you can't get any. That's the problem with me in baseball and golf is my mind is so active, and I'm always thinking about things, and I overthink things and underthink things, and I'm always analyzing this and that. And it was very hard for me to keep my eye on that little teeny golf ball or that baseball. You know, when you threw a curveball at me, I could not freaking hit that thing.
Not many people can. Remember the guy?
No matter how fast it was or slow it was, I just could not hit that thing.
Remember the guy in Major League? Wait, I cannot hit crooked ball or something along those lines. His name is Zerano or something or other.
Yeah. Up your butt, Joe Boo.
Bats need to be
the old pitcher.
Yeah.
Harris.
Yeah. What was his name? It was
You're telling me Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
But now you can't make a picture like that anymore with them.
No, you can't. No way. You can't make Blazing Saddles in California. They're criminalizing satire, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. You can't ever laugh at yourself. I mean, God knows.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't.
They're going to outlaw humor that it's pointed at yourself, right? They're going to outlaw that because it might offend somebody that is similar to you, right?
I can't think of the thing that sets apart. I think a lot of things humans have, the ability to laugh has to be the one thing that is, you know, whoever gave us that. I mean, if you lose that, I think you lose a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think humor is a way to, like, hold leaders accountable, right? I think it's worse in a state where, you know, it's like 60% one party and 40% the other party, and it's essentially a one-party state. The politicians in such states, whether they're, you know, like Wyoming or California or New York, they don't like to answer questions.
No.
They want to answer questions from people who are like-minded. They don't want to answer questions from the other side. And that's what John Kerry is getting at in that video I shared last night about him wanting to essentially end the First Amendment because, you know, people get their news from a wacko on the internet. Well, you know what? I mean, to push back on John Kerry, who's the biggest teller of lies? It's the federal government. The federal government lies us into all these wars, right? They lie to us about these statistics. They lied about this and lied about that. The biggest producer of lies and the most damaging lies that have been told are the ones told by the federal government.
Well,
and I think you see that in the labor statistics. You see that in the inflation number.
I know you're going to disagree with me on this, and a lot of people on the show do, but don't. Because I mean, I very seldom say I know I'm right, but I know I'm right on this one. And people in politics, they know their business better than you and I do. Know their business, and I learned some of this when I was so intrigued when I ran for the board and had to do media training. I was only there two nights, right? So it's not like, you know, I'm good on the media. I'm not, but the principles you learn. And I did, after that, I was so interested, I read up a lot more, right? And you ask yourself, why do these politicians act like they do? It's because they know human nature maybe better than you and I. Now, they may be idiots in a lot of ways, and maybe couldn't even expound to you why they do what they do, because it all sounds like a bunch of crap. But the thing you learn is, forget where the hell I read this, but I read a few spots, and basically I was kind of taught that you have to be careful what you say. Right now, if somebody like me would be dumb enough, okay, if you were to ask me a straight question, and I'm running for dog catcher, and I say, well, Tom, what do you think about the biggest problem in Mayberry is? And I'll say, you know, Mayberry is you notice your taxes are going up, you notice this, that. Mayberry is spending, you know, too much money. The bureaucracy has gotten out of control. And by the way, I looked at 50 other cities our size, and they have 50 people working for Mayberry, and we've got 75. You know, so we have to find a way to be more efficient, blah, blah, blah. If there's 100 people in that room, if two of them are work for the city, you've lost those votes. You'll never get them back.
Yep.
The other people may agree with you, but they're not going to vote for you because of that answer. So you can only lose. You can't win.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree with that.
I mean, so when somebody doesn't answer a question, it's because the negative is 10 times. I mean, how many people do you know? I mean, I know. I have members of my family, for God's sake. I can't stand that person because they said this once.
Yeah.
And I'll go, well, that was like a long time ago. It doesn't matter. If they think that about this issue, which I happen to care about, I don't give a crap if the rest of the time they're Solomon. You know, and it's It's sort of endemic. My dentist, who was passed a while ago, but I was, you know, I went there for years and years. We became pretty good buddies, and he couldn't believe that I voted for who the hell did Bush run against the first time? Is it Gore?
It was Gore. Yeah,
I voted
then
for
Kerry.
Well, yeah. He could not believe, knowing that I'm Catholic, that I voted for somebody who was going to allow abortions, and, you know, on the Republican side allegedly was going to stop them. And all of a sudden, Bush invades. Where the hell did he invade? Iraq?
He first invaded Iraq, then Afghanistan.
Yeah, but he went to Afghanistan first, and then Iraq was later, right? Weapons of mass destruction. We were already in it.
Oh, yeah. He went into Afghanistan first.
So all of a sudden, he's beside himself that we did this stupid thing and invaded Iraq. I said, Doc, you know, I sort of agree with you here, but when you're a single issue voter, you got to take the rest as it comes.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he goes, Tom, I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful.
There are a lot of single issue voters.
Yeah.
And politicians are very good, very skilled at creating the divisions along those single issues.
But they also don't ever want to lob the one out there. Like, if I want to get rid of the tax deduction, and God knows, some stupid tax deduction, and some maybe three people have managed to get into the code that they get and nobody else. If you say, I want to get rid of, like, for instance, the carry. What's the thing where the people who run hedge funds get to use capital gains when they have nothing at risk? Nothing could be stupider than that. Try and change it. If you're running for office and you say, one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to stop this carried interest, they call it. There's 5,000 people or 20,000 people that are in that industry, probably not 20, that you wouldn't get their vote if you were the only person running. Yet the other people who maybe agree with you, it's not enough of an issue for them to vote for you because you can't win.
Yeah.
By taking any kind of a stand, you can't win. So you dodge everyone you can. That's why you and I would never be politicians. We actually might answer questions.
I can never run for office. Yeah. There's no way.
Well, you could run. You can't win.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
There's no way to want to do it because I would not play the game.
You every time you open your mouth, you get
98. I'd upset somebody.
No, you'd have 98 people agreeing with you, not necessarily voting for you, and two people saying, I'm never going to vote for the guy, and I hope he gets hit by a hurricane on the way home.
Yeah. Well, it's like in that church. Every time I open my mouth, I mean, they gasp from the audience and the panelists and the Republicans sitting next to me that moved away from me. It was really striking.
What if
you
were sitting in the middle?
What if you were sitting in the middle? You're crazy, man.
What if you were sitting in the middle and both sides moved away from you? and you were stuck in the middle. He'd say, what did this guy bring?
My wife was having a good time videotaping it, and I was having fun.
Even in the back, he'd say,
I expected it.
Did this guy forget to shower or what?
Yeah, it was really stark.
I'm laughing crazy. Just thinking about it. You guys are moving away from God.
He thought we were allies, and he thought wrong.
Well, I mean, you might have been if he actually would have listened to you.
Yeah, he might have, right? But he's running for office, and he can't be in a picture sitting next to a guy that is espousing these libertarian ideas.
Well, you know,
libertarian ideas. I'm going to lob one at you. Gary Johnson would say.
I'm going to lob one at you. You and I are continuing jousting over the situations that cause these things to happen. Do you recall when they wanted to make the minimum wage for people in like the Seattle airport, like? $19 an hour or something. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that because I remember flying out of SeaTac Airport and thinking I just had the worst hamburger I've ever had in my life. It was like I took a bite out of it and I threw it away. That's how bad it was, right?
But the motivation there, and by the way, I'm 99% with you on this minimum wage stuff. The motivation there is, okay, these people have given money to, if it's like Chicago, have somehow, I use the word, greased the way for themselves to get these, quote, licenses to be the bar in the airport or to be the sandwich joint in the airport or the bagel spot or whatever it is. And we know that it's a captive audience and they're going to be able to charge whatever, 50% more for beer than you would anywhere else in a regular neighborhood tavern, right? And who knows if the lease is cheap or whatever it is, but it is a plum spot. And I could see where if I know I just gave Ricky some deal where he's making $1 million a year with a 15-stool bar, maybe I should tell Ricky, don't be trying to pay anybody less than $19 an hour.
Yeah.
Because I know what it is gave him. Don't be paying some guy $10 an hour. What the hell's the matter with you? Look what I gave you, and you can't share the wealth at all? Ricky would never do that. But
I have no problem with the airport, you know, the airport itself saying, hey, part of the contract is you get this exclusive right to sell your cheeseburgers and nobody else can compete against you in this area of the airport. I have no problem with the airport saying, hey, part of the deal is you got to pay X number of dollars to the employees. I have no problem with that at all. The problem I have is if the state comes in and says, then you know, legislates what everybody has to pay. You know, what private individuals do, what, you know, if people want to form a union, I have no problem with that. But the problem I have is that group of people, whether it's a union or whether it's a group of businesses, they get special favors from government. Favors that protect them from competition.
But if I were to, if you were my right-hand man and I'm governor of Podunk, the state of Podunk, and I say, gee, Hal, we need a few more votes. We ain't doing so hot. What if I were to say to you, yeah, what's our minimum wage? And you go, man, $6. And I say, okay, what's the market rate of somebody, you know, at that level? And you go, $9. And I say, looks to me like we can raise the minimum wage to $7.50. We're not causing any problem. And oh, by the way, I think I'm going to get a few votes out of this one.
Well, you might cause some problems in a remote part of the state where the market wage there is, you know, say $4 an hour because it's so poor. You might cause some problems there, but that's why they raise the minimum wage usually on the federal level. They raise it at a point in time where the market wage is substantially greater than what they're going to raise the minimum wage to. And that way, it's just a political football. That kind of thing just really irks me. I get that just makes me think that politics
what do you
just
mean?
Is
it's genius.
A dirty word.
It's genius.
Well, I mean, it's genius, but to me personally, it's dishonest and disingenuous.
Remember what George Carlin said, and I'm not saying I agree. Look, imagine how stupid the average person is, and imagine 50% of them are stupider than him.
George Carlin is pretty funny. I don't think he could have a career today.
Oh, God, no. I got one for you, a number that when I bring it up, people are going to say, you're right. Now, I wouldn't get a vote for it, not that I'm running for anything. You know, when I entered the business, and I don't want to say what year it was, if you lost money on a capital transaction, if you bought 1,000 IBM for, you know, $60 and sold it for $50, you just lost $10,000, right? Now, how much can you deduct of that $10,000 if you have nothing else going on? How much can you deduct against your salary this year, your other income on your taxes?
Well, I don't know.
You're a professor. You're supposed to know everything.
Tom, I got a hint for you. We don't know everything.
you would never have been on Gilligan's Island chasing Marianne.
Well, I could fix a radio with a coconut. I can do that.
But you have very limited. You're very narrow in your scope. Anyway, the number is $3,000.
Okay.
It was $3,000 in 1980. What do you think it is today?
Oh, probably the same, isn't it?
Same number.
Yeah.
Same number. So if you buy 1,000 shares of NVIDIA at 122.
It's kind of like Social Security, right?
Well,
they haven't adjusted that threshold for income taxes on Social Security.
But I'm saying if you lose 60, someday somebody's going to lose $60,000 in NVIDIA or someplace, you know, I mean, who knows, it'll be a lot higher now. If you don't have anything else, you better live 20 years, bud.
Yeah.
$3,000 a year. Now explain to me, when I entered a business, the Dow was at 800. And now it's, where the bleep is the Dow?
30, 40?
1,000, yeah. something along those lines. Tell me why that number is the same.
Yeah.
Why are people so freaking stupid that number is, why isn't that number $50,000 or $100,000 now? Why do you think one of the major reasons why Bill Clinton, when he was in office, and Carl will say that we never really had a surplus, we got pretty close to having a surplus. Because when the stuff crapped out in Silicon Valley, the people who owed the $100,000 because they made it had to pay taxes on it. And the people who lost the $100,000 couldn't deduct it. $3,000.
Yeah.
Literally, if you lose $100,000 in the market, you got to live 33 years. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Huh.
You better stay healthy and do your jogging and stay away from booze and fried foods, right?
Or find an occupation that you have a passion for and you do it. You feel like, wow, I get paid to do this kind of work? Wow, this is crazy.
But if you went...
Then you can work till you're, 60, 70, 80 years old.
Well, if you make capital gains, in other words, if you make money on a house, a second house along the way, then you can deduct against that.
Yeah.
But not against ordinary income. Now, how has the government... Why hasn't somebody, with all these idiots on TV and everybody who cares about children, why hasn't anybody brought that one up? How many tax bills have we had since 1980?
Yeah.
10, and that number remains the same.
Well, my philosophy on taxes, I say eliminate it all and then just have a transaction tax, 1%. That's it.
Well, whatever. But I'm saying
anytime cash changes hands or money changes hands, boom, like a real small percentage to the federal government. That's it.
I have the same argument with you on that I have with my bro. You always argue.
I'm not in favor of it. I just think it would be less damaging to the economy.
The idea is that the current, according to him and a lot of people, and maybe to you a little bit, the current system is flawed because people can get away with stuff.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. People who have the ability can go around those speed bumps, right? And you have all these people going around the speed bumps, and I think Mishkin's book refers to the ability to mine the loopholes. He calls that financial innovation.
Well, right. But I mean, in his opinion, if we went to a value-added tax, that people wouldn't be able to do that.
I'm not saying value-added tax.
Well,
I'm
whatever.
Saying
my opinion, and people know I'm getting grumpy as I age, maybe it's my South Side roots, the same people who figured out how to game this system, when you write the value-added system or your system, the same people are going to game that system.
Yeah. There's no best way to do it, I don't think.
Well, unless you don't let people game it, which seems to be a national sport here.
Yeah.
And you and I aren't going to change it.
Yeah, I think if you went to one of the disadvantages of the system I envision is I can see lots of vertical integration where they're trying to avoid the transaction taxes on things that they purchase in their supply chains. I can see them vertically integrate at that. So that would be one of the problems with it. But anytime there's a transaction, like you pay a worker, you pay for the rubber that goes into the tire. If you're the car manufacturer, you buy the tires from Firestone.
We already
anytime
have that
transaction. There'd be a tax.
We already have that. It's called sales tax.
Not sales tax. I'm talking about that's on final goods and services. I'm talking about all levels of the chain, not just final goods and services.
Well, now you have a situation where if you have 15 suppliers to a... See, I'd have a real problem with that. If I was in your class, I'd be challenging the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Because if what about... Now, when Pullman first started, they did everything. Okay, they had a foundry. They did the wheels and axles. They made the leather. They tanned the leather for the seats. They had something like 57 buildings. They did all that stuff. So they would only pay a transaction when they sold it, right? Now, if they outsourced...
No, when they bought raw material.
Okay, well, I think...
When they paid employees...
What I'm saying is...
Different services, different
raw
materials.
But now, if you go out and outsource all that stuff, how many times are you going to pay it?
Yeah. Well, anytime there's a transaction, a prostitute...
But what about sell services
to a John,
yeah, but,
there's a
okay,
transaction
if,
tax.
If I'm making a part, and on one side of my garage... I make the raw part, and I walk to the other side, and I attach it together. Do I got to pay myself a transaction tax?
Well,
or
I mean,
if I bought it from another guy, I'd have to pay him.
Yeah, if money transfers from one person, one entity to another entity, yeah, a small, like a 0.5% transaction.
I'm going to say that would be the biggest reason for people to buy up everybody in their supply chain you ever saw.
Yeah, that I've thought about that too. Right, I thought about that too, but. I'm not sure how that would work out. I haven't thought about that. And it's not really my idea.
I'm saying Microsoft be paying nothing, but if you and I try to put cell phones together, we're paying a fortune.
Yeah. But anytime there's a transaction where money's transferred, I mean, if you had it at like 10%, I think you'd have a lot of people doing that. But if it's just 0.5% on the transaction, I'm not sure that would happen. I don't know.
Well, so if you and I are playing golf and I win $20, if you give me the 20, it got to be a tax. But if I say, get your ass over and cut my grass, then that's okay.
Yeah, probably, yeah. So there might it might lead to a barter system, right? It'd be good for a person who has skills in a lot of different areas that can, you know, fix things, you know. Hey, I'll come over and we'll barter. I'll come over and fix your steam boiler.
If I ever clean up all my stuff from back in those areas, if I can find some of my tests from University of Chicago, you'd love them. I bet you'd use some of them. Where you'd say,
probably, oh, yeah. I'd probably code them up and turn them into
an you'd say,
lesson.
Like, I'm going to go out and, like, poop in the street. You know, and the exam is from cleaning it up to sewage to everything else, trace this poop all the way through the system. Because that's really everything you do has all these, it keeps going, right?
Well, I just don't think the current system works very well.
And well, it doesn't.
There's got to be something better to fund the beast that is the federal government.
It works exceptionally well if all your competitors are paying 30% in taxes and you're paying 15%.
You got the best tax lawyers, you got the deepest pockets, you're the most powerful, well-established firm of all time, and it works great for you.
If you were Forest Labs, I don't know who ended up becoming, but if you were the first drug company to move to, I think they moved to Bermuda or Bahamas, one of the two, and they took their patents there, and the company here paid them a fee for their own patents that the U.S. gave them, right? So they ended up paying like 10% in tax and everybody else paying 30. They were able to now outbid you and me for other companies here because they weren't paying it. It's a massive advantage. You can't ever let it get like that, right? To the point where if you and I weren't overseas, if we weren't paying 10% instead of 30, we couldn't compete. You can't ever let it get to that level because you're always going to find people that are going to be able to squirrel around a little bit.
Oh, there's going to always be ways to scam the system. I'm just trying to think of the fairest, simplest system I think works best, right?
Well, I think if you get to the point where if you're not cheating, you can't compete, that's the day you got to change it.
Well, the system that I would prefer is they don't collect any tax.
Well, that's nice. I'd like.
And then the federal government has no money to engage in all these foreign wars.
I'd love a world where we don't need an aircraft carrier, but it's not our world.
Well, I'd love a world where we don't need to finance all these wars that they've been fighting for the last 120 years, right?
But I mean, there are people in this world, as Mike Royko says, "What is war? They got it. We want it. Let's take it." It's never stopped.
Well, war is a tool that the government uses to galvanize the people and create like this patriotism, right?
Well, that's part of it, but it's also part of we don't want somebody seeing we got something and they come take it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, whatever. I mean, anyway, bud, as usual, good stuff. You're not anywhere near it in this rain, are you?
We're in central North Carolina, so we're lucky. It didn't. We got a little bit of rain.
How far west of you were there problems?
Over in the mountains. The mountains just got pummeled. Just pummeled. Bridges are out.
I didn't realize
highways are washed away.
I didn't realize how far west North Carolina went until I looked at the
map. Yeah, North Carolina originally, I think, included Tennessee, and they cut Tennessee off at the Appalachian Peak.
Oh, right.
So Tennessee was, I think, part of the Carolinas at one point. Because I think all the original colonies, the base of the colony was all the land west of it, right? So they just cut off Tennessee and they made it a different state.
Ah.
Yeah, the mountains up there, it got beat up and pummeled, man.
It's bad. I'm sitting there going, how did Carolina get involved? I look at the map and I go, oh, that's why.
It's pretty long east and west. Yeah.
All right, bud. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures up 15. We'll see what today brings. We'll have it all for you tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks, good job, Ricky, as usual.
That's all, folks.